Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Eden Lapucky's novel from 2017 is titled Woman Number 17. It explores the complex relationships of a family with a new nanny in the home, but every character in the story is keeping a secret. Eden herself was plucked from obscurity when author Sherman Alexie promoted her debut novel, California, on the Colbert Report in 2014. Insight producer Cody Drabble talked with Lapucky in 2017. He asked whether the attention she got on the Colbert Report led to access to him.
Well, I don't know how much insider access I have to Stephen Colbert. Most people want to know, is he nice? And the answer is yes. He's very kind and friendly, and everyone who worked for him on the Colbert Report was extremely, they just seemed so happy. So I could only surmise that he's a great boss.
Let's jump into talking about your new book, Woman Number 17. The book alternates between the perspectives. Lady is a mother of two children, and she has stumbled her way into a book deal to write a memoir about raising her mute son. And Esther is a performance artist and a recent Berkeley grad who moves in and becomes the live-in nanny. Each character in this book is grappling with this complex push-and-pull relationship with an overbearing mother figure. Why were you drawn to the mother-daughter dynamic in this novel?
I'm getting this question a lot. I'm realizing that I don't have an answer. I am a daughter, obviously, and I have a great relationship with my mother, and it's gotten even better since becoming a mother myself. My mom has five kids, and I now have two kids, and I go to her to ask her all kinds of advice and, you know, like, what should I do? My child is doing this. And she's always there for me. And I have now become a mother, so I've had to face this change in my life. So I was a writer, and now I'm a writer and a mother, and I've thought a lot about what that means and how to balance those roles, how they can support one another, how they might obstruct one another at times. So I think all those questions were on my mind. I'm not really sure why I wrote about such dysfunctional mother-daughter relationships, considering I have a healthy one with my mom. But I do think in all of my work, I'm interested in the ways that dysfunction gets passed down and how we kind of carry habits of dysfunction from one relationship to the next. So I'm really interested in like how hard it is to be a parent at all, let alone be a parent if you don't have good examples of parenting from your own parents. So I think that's really where the seed for those relationships came from.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Part of the conflict at each center of these mother-daughter relationships is how much the daughter is defined by her mother and vice versa. That seems to be a pretty interesting theme throughout the book.
Yes, definitely. Lady, who's the 41-year-old mother of two, she hasn't spoken to her mother since her older son, who's 18, and Seth, who doesn't speak, she hasn't spoken to her mother for 17 years, since Seth was 1 year old. And she really harbors all of this rage and resentment towards her mother and is trying to escape whatever she's inherited from her mother, when in fact she's kind of reenacting exactly what her mother did to her. She kicks out her younger son's father so that her son doesn't have his dad around all the time, just like her own mother kept Lady's dad from her. So, you know, it's interesting that she's sort of repeating the habits that her mother taught her. And Esther, who goes by S in the novel, her mother is an unstable alcoholic, but she's also quite affectionate and comfortable in her own body, which is something that S at 22 doesn't have. And her performance art is, she's doing this very wild, intense project to become her own mother at her age. So becoming the 22 or 23-year-old version of her mother. So her mother at that age became a nanny, was drinking a lot, was pretty reckless, and she's sort of embarking on that identity. And so while she's actively trying to become her mother, Lady is actively trying to escape her mother. Neither is really possible, is it?
Esther's performance art endeavor reminds me a little bit of The Talented Mr. Ripley with less murder.
I'm pleased that you think so, because that's one of my favorite books. And I love the movie also. I could watch the movie, like, anytime that movie's on cable, you can watch it at any point in the movie, because just for the art direction alone. And I actually reread the book in order to get S's character a little bit better, because I wanted the moments when she locks into her mother's way of being. I wanted the reader to kind of feel a little shift when she was kind of being like her mother or moving out of her mother's identity, or when she kind of wasn't sure if a certain feeling she was experiencing was her own feeling or her mother's, and kind of like a muddling of identity. Because whereas Ripley, he's a killer,
right,
and he's a psychopath or whatever, she is not those things. She's an artist and she's young, but she definitely doesn't know who she is. She has a very nimble identity, so it gives her the power to even try this crazy performance project, but it also makes her powerless because she doesn't quite have a core of self, which can be her kind of moral compass.
Each mother-daughter relationship in your novel, Woman Number 17, dives into whether or not parents can protect their children from the dangers of the world.
That's definitely there. I mean, I now have, my son is almost 6 and my daughter is 18 months. And I really struggle with wanting to protect him from the almost by-the-minute horrors of the world, and when do they need to find out about certain scary things that have happened or will happen or are happening, and also not wanting to protect them too much to make them unable to negotiate a complicated world. So I struggle with that. How do you do that with children? How are you their place of solace and also their teachers? So these two characters, definitely Lady, you know, she has raised this child, Seth. He is now 18. He's never spoken. He has said one word in his entire life.
He tweets a lot, though.
He tweets. He's an avid Twitter user.
And he's a really sharp, funny tweeter.
He's popular on Twitter. I gave him selective mutism, which isn't really an accurate diagnosis because people with selective mutism usually speak to one or two people, and their mutism comes from social anxiety or they're on the autism spectrum. And Seth does not have those disabilities. I wanted to make sure that he could negotiate minor social cues because I wanted him to be an agent of the novel's action. And so he can communicate in all these ways. And in fact, he's the best communicator in the book in some ways. I mean, compared to these women who talk and talk and often can't say what they really mean. But I think Lady has suffered as a mother because she wants very badly to protect Seth and to make sure that nothing harms him. And yet that has an effect. Harmed him. She isolated him. She kind of kept him from finding certain communities. And that, in the end, was sort of selfish, even though it was coming from a place of maternal love, I think.
Lady's real name isn't Lady. It's Pearl. And for her whole life, she's been living with people who try to define her identity for her.
You know, what's funny is I didn't realize that I had two characters who didn't go by their real names until I finished the book and I looked back and I said, oh, wow, that's an interesting pattern to pick up on. But it's true. Lady's real name is Pearl. And that actually, that one section was the first thing I ever wrote for the book a few months before I started the novel in earnest. So that was the first idea I had, that this is a woman with a strange kind of feminine name, Lady, but that in fact isn't her true name. And it's interesting to me that Lady's name was foisted upon her, and Esther, she has given herself a different name. So they go by different names, but one is the agent of that change and the other is not.
Each person in this novel is a creative person pursuing some kind of self-expression. They have to confront this tension between how they present themselves to the outside world and which secrets they keep for themselves. And that's a theme that you also touch upon in your first book, California.
It's true. I'm pretty interested in secrets. I find the ways that people, humans in general, across the board, all across the world, it seems to me that many people desire intimacy and connection, and yet they over and over again impede that very intimacy they crave by not being themselves. So that happened in California, my novel about a married couple at the end of the world, where Cal and Frida, my husband and wife, they would be much better off if they just told each other everything they know, but they don't do that. And it's almost as if the privacy gives them some kind of freedom that they don't have in a world that's just shrunk down to the two of them. And in this novel, you're right, my characters all have some kind of mask that they're wearing, and oftentimes they use art to both reveal themselves and also to hide themselves. So Lady is on contract to write this memoir, but she feels like a fraud because it's supposed to be that kind of like inspirational mothering memoir, when in fact she has all kinds of problems that she hasn't worked through about being a mother, about being abandoned by her son's father. S is literally not herself in the name of this art project. Seth seems to be able to be more himself on Twitter. So there's all kinds of like revealing and hiding happening in this novel.
At the top of our segment, I introduced you with a quick mention of the Stephen Colbert episode. So by including that, am I denying you the right to define yourself as an artist by mentioning a successful man that helped you along the way?
Whoa, that's deep, man. I did not think of it that way, but now I'm going to sue you. Yeah, that's interesting. If I try to think of my own career narrative, as it were, I'm okay with the Stephen Colbert introduction just because it's so exceptional. And I recognize that that's like the luckiest thing that would ever happen to any first-time author. I would never disavow it. I'll be forever grateful for that. So I'm okay with my story starting there. I'm glad that that's the beginning of the story and not the end of the story. So I'll give him props. He's a man, but he can have props.
There's one criticism that's come up a little bit with your first book, California, and to some degree with this newest novel, Woman Number 17. And the criticism is that the characters aren't likable enough. Do you think that having likable characters is a useful metric to evaluate a novel?
I do notice that the unlikable character charge is often about female characters.
Right.
And I do think there's a real burden that women carry where we have to be likable. You know, that thing where men telling women they don't know to smile. Why is that something that women are required to do and men aren't? So I think it's an interesting question. I definitely think it's gendered. I'm all right with people who don't like them. And what is really pleasing me about Woman Number 17 is I'm seeing a lot of reader reviews like on Goodreads or Amazon that say, I can't stand these characters, but I love this book, or I love watching these women behave badly. That makes me pleased because I feel like even if we're not the same kind of reader in that they like likable characters, they're still enjoying my novel, which means I've done something right for them.
Before I let you go, I have to ask you, what is next? Is novel number 3 in the works, and can you tell us anything about it?
Novel number 3 is in the works. I have about 70 pages, so I'm holding it pretty close to my chest at this point because I think at 70 pages, you really don't know what the beast is yet. But I will tell you it takes place in L.A. again, and I'm hoping the characters are a little bit more likable, but they probably
aren't. We're not going to hold you to that.
Author Eden Lopucky talking with Insight producer Cody Drabble in May of 2017. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio.